everybody, Dieter Kurtenbach, joined by Mark Medina. We're the Bay Area News Group's Warriors guys, and we might not be long for the season here, Mark. Warriors are now down 3-1 in the NBA Finals. They lose 105-92 in Game 4. I said going into this game that it was do or die. It looked like they died, and frankly, my takeaway from this contest, and I pose this question to you, Mark Medina, is there any reason to believe that this Warriors team, given everything we've seen this season, given everything we've seen in this series, can win three straight games to become NBA champions?
I don't see it. The Warriors certainly believe it. They're citing the whole, hey, they did it against the OKC Thunder in the 2016 NBA Finals. They're still leaving the door open that Kevin Durant's coming back, but I don't think Kevin Durant's coming back. I mean, Steve Kerr had said that he's coming back at some point, game five or game six. But when it comes to the clarity of when will he actually practice, he's not too sure. You know, earlier this week he was saying it looks like he's going to start doing that Thursday, do some scrimmages, and then all of a sudden he didn't. He said he misspoke. The training staff told him otherwise. If I'm doing the math here, it doesn't look like he's really done a lot of drills outside of shooting work. And usually there's some kind of buildup before practice. They have a practice Sunday. They play Monday. Now, maybe no game five, game six, but that means he would have to practice Wednesday. I just feel like the Warriors are, as much as they're saying that, they're almost preparing for the scenario that Kevin's not coming back. And then B, Toronto's not going to self-destruct like the Oklahoma City Thunder did in 2016. So I could see the Warriors pushing it back here to Oracle. Hey, maybe even game seven, but this Raptors team's too damn good, and the Warriors have too many injury questions. And, yeah, it's been a tough one for them.
You think about what happened tonight in this game. The Warriors came out with the requisite energy necessary to win, right? That was a championship-level defensive performance in the early goings of this contest. They couldn't make a basket. Okay, that happens. They were turning the ball over a lot. That's certainly in line with what we've seen the Warriors do. And they have a four-point halftime lead, which, not great, but they're in position. You continue to do what you did in the first half. You clean up a little bit, a couple things. Now you're cooking. Now it's 2-2. We got a brand new series. It doesn't matter if Kevin Durant's coming back or not. You're in position to win a championship. And what I saw in the third quarter from this Warriors team is the opposite of what you would normally expect from a team that purports itself to have the championship medal. And frankly, they're back, the history of three championships in the last 4 years, back-to-back championships. You would think that they would be able to rise to that occasion. But what I saw was Toronto being the team that was cool, calm, and collected, and handled their business and just kept chipping away and playing better defense and executing better on offense. And the Warriors wilt under that pressure. Toronto has done a wonderful job of counterpunching any positivity that the Warriors have had. Most teams do not do what Toronto is doing right now, so we should give them a lot of credit. At the same time, let's be honest about what this Warriors team is. And this is not just in this series. This has been the entire playoffs. Think about who they've played. Let's go back one round. They play the Portland Trailblazers. Portland Trailblazers, even without Kevin Durant for the Warriors, come on. Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum were cash before that series started. The Warriors played maybe 10 good minutes of basketball that entire series and swept them. That should tell you the level of difference between the Warriors and the Portland Trailblazers. You go to the round before that. Okay, the Houston Rockets, they have the Warriors in their crosshairs. They're frothing at the mouth. They want it so bad. What happened when they got the chance? They Paul Pierced their pants, and anyone could have gone out there. You and I could have played for the Warriors in games 5 and 6 and won. And frankly, given the depth that they went to, it looked like it.
You know what? I got to fact check you on that. Did you see the media game live stream there? That was pretty bad basketball that I had and basically everyone else. So I will take that back. I don't agree with you there, but I got your overall point.
Maybe Lee Ellis could have played. Nevertheless, the Rockets were not up to scruff. They did not have the temperament capable of getting to a point of winning a championship, much less getting out of the second round. They wilted in the moment. But the Warriors didn't play that great of basketball in that series. They were just opportunistic, and the Rockets self-destructed. I think that the truest example of what the Warriors have been, because they'll say the entire regular season was bunk. No, none of it mattered. We didn't care. And frankly, the tape backs that up. The truest example that we probably have of this team was when they played the Los Angeles Clippers in the first round. And let's not forget that the Clippers took two games off of these Warriors, and they made the Warriors work. And yes, the Warriors would blow them out in a couple of those games, but they also had Kevin Durant. But man, the defense was sporadic at best. It didn't look like a championship-level performance, and you just said, well, they'll keep ramping it up and ramping it up. Tonight was the night. If you were to ramping up to something, it was this game. And yet, their defense was abysmal in this contest. And I don't want to put that entirely on Draymond Green, even though Draymond will surely take the criticism. I thought Draymond was flying. What I saw, though, was a Klay Thompson that was hobbled, and of course, that is obvious. You can't put this on Klay either. So you couldn't really have Klay on Kawhi. But I saw a bunch of dudes just really playing over-aggressive defense, not understanding what their opponent was doing on a play-by-play basis, just getting totally fooled by moves. I saw a Toronto team that just ran basic, simple execution to beat a defense that was wild and out of control. Steph Curry said the wheels fell off. Yeah, to say the least. The Warriors are not going to have a chance to even get this to a game six if they don't play significantly. I mean, I'm talking night and day better defense. And then we haven't even gotten into the offensive stuff, which was pretty rough to watch as well. I don't see it. I just don't see it. Listen, there is I'll give some deference here, right? Maybe the Warriors do have it in them. But everyone who's saying, look at 2016 when they beat the Thunder. Jesus Christ, the Warriors would kill to have that 2016 team back. That team was good. They could play some really good defense. And you're right. The Oklahoma City Thunder did their bid too. These Raptors are definitely not doing it. I think it's done. And frankly, I would be somewhat stunned given the environment that we've seen in Toronto and the positivity that that crowd brings. And the fact that I just don't think that the Warriors have any adjustments that they can really make. They like what are they supposed to do? They need to play sounder, better basketball. Like, that's not an adjustment. That's just something that you either have or you don't. And they haven't had it all year.
You know what? Here's one adjustment. Don't play DeMarcus Cousins. That was awful to watch that first quarter. And I don't fault the effort. He tried as well as he can. I get the circumstances that, hey, he missed a significant chunk of time since game two of the NBA playoffs. But, you know, aside from that game two performance in the fourth quarter, he's been abysmal. And it's just a liability. I think he had like three turnovers in 2 minutes. He had a lot of foul trouble. He doesn't seem to have the self-awareness. He thinks it's not his fault. It's bad calls. He's arguing with the officials. Steve Kerr is trying to tell him things. He's getting very frustrated with that. He's getting yanked early in the third quarter because he's been terrible, and he kind of puts on a mood. Yeah, if they want to make an adjustment, I don't know if it's a game changer, but DeMarcus was so bad, like anything right now would be an upgrade.
100% agree. Cousins, and listen, I don't want to put too much of it on him, but he also does need some criticism, as you mentioned. It would be a lot to expect him to be an impact player in this game, but it was little things that really frustrated me. I mean, it was almost an offensive performance from DeMarcus Cousins. Things like he gives the ball up on the perimeter, is still being defended, and just doesn't set a screen. I mean, that is the base of the Warriors' offense, and instead he's looking for the ball. Pass me the ball, pass me the ball. He went back to Sacramento, DeMarcus Cousins, and it's completely unacceptable. And you noticed, as soon as Looney came in, Kevon Looney, warrior of all warriors. I mean, this dude is playing. He can barely lift his left arm over his head. He's got this collarbone injury. We thought he was out for the series. Steve Kerr, I guess, misspoke on that too. He comes in and provides a real positive force for the Warriors just because he makes smart plays. Doesn't even matter if he scores. If he gives up the ball on the perimeter, he goes and he sets a screen, then he gets his ass into the post. And DeMarcus Cousins still thinks, and listen, I don't know how much you can blame the guy, but ultimately this experiment that has happened this year has not worked because none of the good basketball lessons that the Warriors teach have become ingrained because they sure as hell should have come out in these moments in game four. None of that has worked, and he just goes back to the Sacramento thing of give me the ball, I'm trying to get this contract, I'm the man on the team. I agree with you. I don't know how you play him. He was that bad. He was that bad in Game 3. Game 3 was like a laughably bad performance. It might be the worst NBA Finals performance I can remember. But ultimately, that was the dice roll the Warriors had to go. When you don't have enough dudes, you're counting on DeMarcus Cousins to make smart basketball plays. That's the pickle the Warriors are in. And it goes to my point. Why is there any reason to believe that this team is going to win three straight? I mean, this is where they're at. They're trusting Quinn Cook to knock down a bunch of shots. They need Sean Livingston to play major minutes. And listen, everyone loves Sean. He's a consummate professional, but and he was great tonight, but he just doesn't have it in him. And you're asking DeMarcus Cousins to play smart basketball. You're playing Andrew Bogut in crunch time. I mean, what are we doing here? What are we doing here, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we can dissect their execution all they want, but it's really it comes down to is they hit the wall of they're no longer as healthy as need be, and it's been a chain reaction. You know, Kevin Durant being out ever since Game 5 of the Houston Rockets, they were able to get by against Houston, partly because of how well they played and partly how poorly Houston played and because Portland didn't have the depth. But there was a chain reaction here where Kevin's out. Andre Iguodala was assuming a huge workload. That then caught up to him with that calf injury. When he came back, he was not the same player. He had kind of a lightning in a bottle moment when he hit his head in Game 2 and hit that three. But other than that, ever since the calf injury, or actually ever since Game 6 against Houston, hasn't been the same player. Game 2 against Toronto, he kind of had this amazing second half after hitting his head. So that's been the chain reaction. And then you go everywhere else. Without Kevin, it's exposed the lack of, you know, bench consistency. It's one thing to hold it down for maybe a game or two, have some guys here or there to play, but it's hard to do consistently. And then without Kevin, usually if Kevin was starting, they would have put Draymond at center. That would have solved some of the DeMarcus things or just the center by committee in general. But now they can't really put Draymond at that spot because Andre is a starter still, but he's not sliding up. They would be really undersized. So,
and they did that a little bit tonight. Yeah. I mean, and it didn't work.
Yeah, and then it's been a chain reaction. Then Klay has his, you know, his hamstring injury, and that, you know, Steph surprisingly was really able to play even without him there. But, you know, the lack of consistent spacing with that has made Steph kind of a shell of himself. So it all starts from the health standpoint, and it's trickled down.
But then you also look at a team like Toronto, and yes, they are much healthier than the Warriors, but they have their injuries too, right? Like Kyle Lowry has a bad thumb. Fred VanVleet was playing injured in this one. Danny Green's legs are just shot. I mean, he got traded because people didn't think he could do it anymore. Or he's no longer with the Spurs because they didn't think he could run, much less, you know, knock down shots. And frankly, other than Game 3, they might be right. He was 1-for-7 tonight from beyond the arc, 1-of-8 overall. Kawhi Leonard is playing on at least one bum wheel. I mean, the defensive performances from Kawhi Leonard have been so uncharacteristically bad, and yet he has saved up enough energy to where he just wrecked the Warriors. I mean, he's wrecked the Warriors offensively and controlled the pace in the last, well, all four games, frankly, other than for that short spurt in the third quarter and maybe a little bit at the end of the second quarter of Game 2. It's been the Kawhi Leonard show, and it doesn't look that incredible because he hasn't put up a 47-point quarter or whatever, but, like, the dude's a stone-cold killer. Yeah, I'm taken back by how much these Raptors have risen to the moment. This would have been the game to wilt, right, if you're Toronto. And yet, Fred VanVleet, I don't know what happened. I mean, he didn't have the greatest game ever, but you got Fred VanVleet and Serge Ibaka being plus 12 and plus 11 off the bench. Serge Ibaka was fantastic tonight, 9 of 12. They just keep coming in waves. I mean, these guys are absolutely unflappable. I mean, you can't tell me that doesn't come from Kawhi leading the way. You just can't tell me. And meanwhile, I'm looking at this Warriors team, and yes, Steph, it all emanates from Steph, but Steph has been sporadic as hell in this series. And yes, he had that great game, but I'm looking for the spot. And you're looking knowing that Kevin, who apparently went through some workouts and they have not gone well, and no one has an expectation that he will play, at least certainly in Game 5 and perhaps beyond. And there's obviously a tremendous level of frustration, not at Kevin, but at the injury that it's kept him off the floor. And you know Kevin's frustrated. You know the Warriors are like, God, and we thought you would be here for game one of the finals. Here we are going into game five. We're down 3-1, and we don't know if we're going to have you or not. Now, no one's questioning his heart. No one's questioning any of that. And if they are, they're doing it behind closed doors. But it's a calf injury. It's finicky. And this one is apparently particularly finicky to the point where he's incapable of going out and even running up and down the court enough, not even to get into the conditioning level of missing as much time as he has. I just don't see it unless the Warriors just get super hot and kind of super lucky in a lot of different areas, because I don't see the defensive bona fides. We haven't seen them all year. I don't see an offense that can get around this elite Toronto defense. I don't see a bench guy who can spark something in this team and give them the unexpected boost that they're looking for. What I see is them needing at least 70 points, if not more, from Klay Thompson and Stephen Curry. Andre Iguodala not going 1-for-6 from the floor. Draymond Green doing everything he did tonight and about 10 times more. No DeMarcus Cousins, which means more than 20 minutes of Kevon Looney with his broken collarbone, which means, you know, Andrew Bogut continuing to play solid basketball, which means less Quinn Cook, which means probably less Sean Livingston, which means probably less Alphonso McKinney. Like, you're going to put a bunch of guys who already looked absolutely gassed in a situation where they got to play 44, 45 minutes a night. And we're expecting them to do that for three straight nights and win? Come on, man. I mean, I know you're not suggesting it, but people will. And I want to tell them, what planet are they living on? There's something about championship heart. I understand it. The Raptors, I think, have it too, even though they haven't won a championship. The Warriors might have it. Heart can't get you over this hump. The Raptors are so much better. They're just so much better. I don't know where this leads the Warriors. We can get into this after the season is over. But I have a hard time believing that the Warriors come back and play another game at Oracle Arena. I mean, it really, just given what we've seen out of them so far and given what we've seen out of the Raptors.
Yeah, I could see the Warriors winning game five just because maybe Toronto lets its guard down and Steph or Klay just have one of those moments.
Yeah.
To your larger point of can it sustain for three games, I think that's just asking a lot because there's so many unpredictable variables of, you know, how realistic is it to depend on all those different guys. And let's say the best case scenario is somehow Kevin comes back, right? Now, I have to caution that the Warriors have been very tight-lipped, and even people in the organization don't know because the training staff keeps the information pretty closely guarded. But I know talking to outside medical people, it was initially thought that it was going to be a grade one strain because that's what usually describes what they called a mild strain. That's what the Warriors called it. It's not mild, Clearly. Obviously, because the projected timetable for that is 7 to 10 days. A grade two strain is between 4 to 6 weeks. On Saturday, that will be the 4-week mark that Kevin injured his calf against Houston. But that's kind of the bare minimum. Like, right. There, in theory, he might need 2 weeks, and obviously that's when the finals would already be over. But say that it is a best-case scenario. Like, I think that no matter what the Warriors are saying publicly, I'm just connecting what the medical people say, you know, that just know these kind of things. I don't buy the whole he only needs one practice. Like, there needs time to do that. So the best case that I see is that he gets in for a game six. But what's the integration going to be like?
Exactly.
If he's out for a month, I get it that it's still going to be beneficial of it's Kevin Durant. If nothing else, he attracts double teams and makes maybe things easier for Steph and Klay. But I don't know. It's a lot to ask for of him.
And we saw the limitations tonight with Klay on defense, right? So the only time that the Warriors have really had success in this series was when they had Klay on Kawhi, and that allowed Andre Iguodala and Draymond Green to play a lot of help side defense. They put them on Pascal Siakam and Kyle Lowry, respectively, and they could leave them, and they could over-attack. And that meant that you could double-team Kawhi with some impunity because those two guys are so good at help side that they could fly around and make up for it. They couldn't do that tonight because obviously Klay has his hamstring. And yes, there were some times that they did it. This is something I'm writing about for the morning. So by the time you hear this, it will probably be up. The Warriors have switched everything for 5 years. And this is the first series I can remember them not switching, because they cannot keep up with Toronto's height. They cannot keep up with Kawhi Leonard. They're not switching. They're straight man to manning. And it's, they're out of their element. This is not the Warriors as we know them. They're not playing good enough defense. And I guess maybe they go to switching in game five and hope that it works, but there's a reason they're not doing it. It's because they know they'll get burned. And man, you can't have Steph in that situation. Maybe that's the adjustment. Maybe that's the thing. But ultimately, the fact that the Warriors aren't doing it tells me so very much. The fact that that's a lot of deference to the Toronto Raptors and their offense. And the Raptors are absolutely eating them up doing it. And I don't think it's a bad call, honestly. But at this point, I guess you just have to change it. You have to switch. And you're probably going to get really burned. But maybe it unlocks something for them. I don't know. It has been a peculiar series because of the expectations around the Warriors. But I just don't think that you can look at anything the Raptors have done through four games and say that they don't deserve to be up 3-0. Frankly, they probably could have swept. I mean, let's just be honest. That's the difference. And I'm glad that you brought it up. Everyone says, well, Kevin Durant's coming back. There's no guarantee that Kevin Durant, one, comes back, and two, if he comes back, that they win. Like, oh, Kevin Durant's back. That's an automatic win. Not at this juncture in the series. Not with all of the different moves that chess moves that both of these teams have had to make. It'd be interesting. It'd add some intrigue. It'd make our jobs a little bit easier. But, I mean, Kevin Durant shows up. It's not like, well, Warriors 3-0 from here. Who knows?
Can you imagine, though, for team content, Kevin Durant comes back and they win three games? He plays so well, he gets finals MVP.
Defined, his entire career in many ways has been defined by 3-1, right? He loses 3-1 when he's with the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Warriors bring him in after they go down 3-1. If he comes back and they go 3-0 and come back from 3-1, that'd be quite something to go to New York with. I mean, maybe re-sign with. Listen, there's going to be a lot of eulogies written for the Warriors. Perhaps we just did one, or at least I did one. Maybe. I mean, if any team can do it, it's these Warriors. But again, just no evidence. Like, right? If any team should perform a lot better in a game four, it's also the Warriors. And yet here we are talking about them being down 3-1. And me looking at a team that, like, okay, Steph needs to be better. Like, Steph's legs were completely shot. Like he was hesitating on three-pointers. Like he didn't look like he had it in him. And this is something that I do think we don't talk about enough. Like, people overestimate the length of dynasties, especially lately, right? People say the Spurs are a dynasty, but that was very sporadic championships. What they were was consistently good. And some years they were great. We can say if it's a dynasty or not. Maybe the Warriors get to that point.
Phil Jackson made the ultimate dig on the Spurs over the years. He said, they're not a dynasty, they're a force. And obviously he wanted to say that because he was part of the Bulls dynasty and the Lakers dynasty. But I think he had a point. Not that I think this is going to happen, but I just need to get it out there we had that subject. If Kevin were to come back and they win three in a row and he plays well, he gets finals MVP, like, this shouldn't have had to be so clear in this, because I think there's something to be said with how well he's played, how for the most part, big picture, they were able to integrate everything together. Mm-hmm. But if he does that, that in a way enhances everything that he's meant to this organization and diminishes all that stupid talk of the asterisk stuff.
Right.
And I wonder, would that make him not feel such a thing about all that outside noise? But I don't think that's going to happen, but I need to get that out there.
I mean, are we trying to figure out what will make Kevin Durant happy? Because there are a lot of people who are paid a lot of money and still don't know the answer to that. I mean, the Golden State Warriors, I mean, what have we done for the last 2 years? Bob Myers has a whole team of people wondering how they can make Kevin Durant happy so that he re-signs, because they know this is it. You can't replace. Everyone goes, oh, well, Kevin Durant leaves, they'll just get somebody else. That's not how this works. Kevin Durant leaves, you can't replace that salary. They're well over the salary cap. Stephen Curry is going to be making $45 million in a couple of years. Him alone is going to make sure that they're over the salary cap every year. Clay's going to get a max deal, as he deserves, as we certainly saw in Game 3 and again Game 4 tonight. Like, Clay's the real deal. Give that man his money. Draymond Green deserves a contract extension. They might not do it and might get cute, but frankly, I think when Draymond goes, this whole thing goes. So there's a very good chance that he gets $25 million plus in an extension this offseason, or he hits the free agent market next year and even gets more money than that. The Warriors are going to be over the cap for the rest of our lives, it seems. Kevin Durant leaves, you don't just get to replace that. It's not a trade. They're never going to get under the cap. The only reason they got Kevin Durant is because they got a $20 million spike in the salary cap. They made a couple of depth moves, but not that many and not that complicated of stuff, to get enough money to bring in Kevin Durant, who took less money to come in. If Kevin Durant stays, the dynasty continues, even if they lose this series, because they will be the prohibitive favorites again next year. They will have learned, I presume, knowing this organization, they will have learned from the mistakes that they made. Mainly, we won't use our mid-level exception on DeMarcus Cousins, and we'll go out and try to actually get some guys who can help us with some minimum contracts instead of trying to go young, because that worked out so damn well. If Kevin Durant leaves, the Warriors are still going to be very good, but it will absolutely, this series, this is how they end, right, Mark? I mean, think about it. You think about the 2004 NBA Finals. You think about the Miami Heat in LeBron's last year. How do they fail? It's not because the stars aren't great. It's because the guys around them can't keep up. That's how the Detroit Pistons won. That's how the Spurs beat that Miami Heat team. And then it kind of falls apart from there. I mean, you see the death of a dynasty in real time. This has all of those vibes and a little bit more right now. Again, maybe the Warriors have it in them. I don't see it, and I'm pretty... The one thing in life I might be optimistic about is the Warriors are going to pull through. Like, that's the one thing that usually I think to myself, well, you know, I might be a hater on 99% of stuff, but these Golden State Warriors, they got that something special. I don't see any of it. I don't see any of it. I don't see a glimmer in their eye. I don't see it. Even Draymond the other night when he goes, we're going to win game four, we're going to win game five, we're going to come back and celebrate at Oracle. I was sitting there and I just went, I don't believe you. I don't believe you. And it's easy to say now in hindsight, but I just remember being like, usually in moments like this, I think to my gut reaction means something. I remember very specifically 2016 NBA Finals. Klay Thompson starts digging at LeBron James, saying this is a man's game and stuff. And I remember very specifically saying, you screwed up, Klay. You screwed up because that's all you needed. That's all you needed. You have not won this series yet. You have not gotten to the point where it looks like the other team is truly defeated. And LeBron is now going to come out and kick your butt in game five. And then we'll see what happens in game six. But if it goes to a seven, things are going to get real interesting. And let's see how you responded. Let's see how much of a man you are in that moment. I remember there was a karmic thing to that. And I remember feeling that. When the Warriors said earlier in that series, we're fine. We're going to come back. I remember looking at sort of the way that series played out, and I thought to myself, they could absolutely win three straight games. They had won 73 games in the regular season before. We saw them win 24 straight games at one point. And you just say to yourself, the makings are there to where they can make this happen. They had the right formula. I don't see any formula. I don't see any karmic balance shift. The Raptors have certainly given zero bulletin board material. I got nothing. In terms of optimism, I am absolutely out of it. Even if Kevin Durant comes back, I'm thinking to myself, who cares? What's it matter? Just take the rest of the season off, because this thing feels over. And the only reason I'm not writing that in big, bold headlines, it's done. It's over. Call it over. It's one, I got burned on that LeBron James in 2016 after they lost game four, the Cavs lost game four. And I said his championship window had closed, which the points of the column were right. I just wrote it at the wrong time. And two, because the Warriors, after everything that they have done, deserve the respect of not burying them before they're actually dead. But boy, they are right. They are in critical condition, and everybody's talking about when they pull the plug. Again, Mark, do you got anything for me here?
I don't think it's going to happen. I think they can force a game seven. There's always that 5% chance. I mean, especially if Kevin comes back.
You're giving him five. You should take it.
Yeah. Yeah, we're doing Vegas odds here, right? Yeah. You never discount them, but I'm just looking at the body of evidence right now, what they're dealing with. I'm just very skeptical of it. Now, if people want to think that, if the Warriors want to think that, certainly they should.
Yeah.
I don't think it's crazy, but I'm connecting what they're going through right now with all the overlapping injuries, Toronto playing really well, and, you know, you're having kind of an uneven bench, which has risen to the occasion at certain points, but then it comes back to what they usually are.
And three straight
games. And to do that for three straight games, I think, is asking a lot.
You can't say this team wasn't interesting. Whatever happens from here on out, they were hella interesting. And if they win this one, please pretend you never heard anything I said on this podcast. There's going to be a lot of stuff to talk about before game five. There's going to be a lot of stuff to talk about whatever happens in game five afterwards. You're going to be hitting the paywall. We get it. That's the way it goes. You're insatiable. You need your content. And we are members of Team Content. You should get the Clay deal. Clay Thompson had a great game coming back from injury, fought through it, showed a lot of heart. You could show a lot of brains by getting the Clay deal. That's 11 cents a day for the next 11 months. Get all of the Great Bay Area News Group coverage on the San Jose Mercury News website, on the East Bay Times website. And hell, if you want to go a little higher, you could actually get a real paper. Novel concept. You'll also get the Championship Book 3, which will probably be our last championship book.
You know what? It'll bring back some good memories for them.
Nothing. Mark Medina, bringing the optimism here on the end of it. I am going to be trashing the Warriors' effort after Game 4 on my Twitter account. That's at @dkurtenbach. Mark Medina will be keeping it straight and calling it like it is on his Twitter account. That's @markg_Medina. Listen, I don't know how many more of these shows we have left, but if you have listened, if you've made it this far, we'd really appreciate it if you hit that subscribe button if you haven't already, if you left a review, if you're a longtime listener, and let us know on Twitter, let us know via email what you think about it and you know what we can do better, or what you like, you know, what you really like about the show. We enjoy bringing it to you. It is a labor of love for sure, because most of the time we are fighting it at the end of the night. I'm sure you pick that up every now and again, but we love bringing it to you, so let us know what you like about it so that we can bring you more of that good stuff. We are going to get on some tubes that fly 35,000 feet into the sky and head to Toronto, maybe for the last time. I don't know if we're ever going to be in this, where are we, the officials' locker room? It's a wonderful room. The officials' locker room. I don't know if we're ever going to be in this building again, Mark Medina, which is a scary thought for me because I live so close, and I really am going to miss that short commute. Before we head out, I do want to share this thought on Oracle Arena real quick, if this is in fact the end. A lot of people will say this is an unfitting end to Oracle Arena. In many ways, it's an extremely fitting end. Oracle Arena was a house of horrors for the Golden State Warriors for like 42 years, on and off, probably like 38 out of those 42 years. The Warriors just absolutely sucked. I will say this, I have been extremely disappointed in the crowds the last two nights here at Oracle. Tonight, we heard Raptors fans almost take over the building in the fourth quarter. And I get it, the Warriors didn't give them much to cheer for, but boy, that was unbecoming of Oracle Arena. A lot of people have been saying, especially in the wake of the handsy billionaire in Game 3, writing about how the team is moving to San Francisco and it's the end of an era. Let's be honest, the era ended as soon as this team started to win. Oracle Arena was not known for winners. As soon as this team started to win, the demographics of that lower bowl changed, and we got jerks like Mark Stevens or whatever hanging out more and more. That fan base did not bring it the way that the fan base that I showed up to Oakland brought it. And listen, if you're one of those people who wears the fleece vest and you're offended by this, so be it. This place was once the toughest place to play in the NBA. We have seen it gradually change year over year as they have won to no longer being that. So maybe it is fitting that they go out with a real crappy performance, because that was the team that a lot of people cheered for back in the day.
Well, I mean, what's interesting with this game is you saw the crowd identity change throughout the game. It seemed less techie to open the game, and you call, okay, this is the Oracle of old. This is what it's all about. And they were cheering. They're putting it on. When there were times when the Warriors were squandering that 11-point lead, they were bringing it to try to get them going, to get their engines revved up. But then once it became clear Toronto's got this, a lot of fans left, and all of a sudden Canada took over. Canada invaded the Bay Area. That's ridiculous.
But, like, it makes sense, though, right, Mark? Like, you get a bunch of, let's just call it techies. It doesn't matter what they were. The new crowd, it's a Friday night. They got some soda pops in them. They're ready to rumble. It's a big game. Let's boogie. But they're front runners. They weren't here back in the day. and they're paying out the ears. And listen, the Warriors are always going to take that money, and they'll keep charging more and more. They're always going to take it. That's the business of sports. You got to pay Stephen Curry $45 million a year in a couple of years. You can't be doing that off of teacher salaries coming to the going to the season tickets. But they're front runners, and when the Warriors were no longer running in front, getting the hell out of here. And it's a shame. It's a shame, but it's never going back. And I don't know if we're ever coming back here, but the last 5 years have been fascinating in watching it all change and seeing it tonight with kind of how it went out. I thought it was actually fitting because I'm not necessarily holding this place in the highest of reverence. I love it here. This is as cool of an atmosphere as I have ever been a part of, but I'll be honest, the Scotiabank Arena has been a much better home court advantage than the Oracle Arena has, and I never thought I'd say that out loud, but here we are. Today's the day, and it's probably only a matter of days until the Toronto Raptors are NBA champions, unless the Warriors have one more great miracle in them. Okay, we got to get out of here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing if you do. And listen, if this is the last time we're at Oracle Arena, if this is the last time you listen because we're going to have a Monday night show, thank you for listening all season long. It's obviously been Mark and I's pleasure to bring you our thoughts, takes, analysis, and all of our news on a regular basis. All right, everybody. Have a good one.